Our next speaker this morning is Matthew Whiting from Washington State University.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you, and aloha. It's a pleasure for me to be participating in the session this morning and following a good friend like Giannis. Nice work. I'm going to describe to you in the next 12, 13 minutes a project that we've started about 5 or 6 years ago that came about from some frustrations in crop load management and recognizing some of the issues that growers were facing in the Pacific Northwest and, in fact, around the world. I'm presenting on behalf of my co-author, Probir Das, who was an MS in Ag student in my program. So at the outset, you might ask the question, why are we so concerned about pollination? I think the responses are fairly intuitive and quite straightforward. Pollination and actually it's subsequently fertilization, which is a critical and clearly fundamental step that determines directly fruit quantity, but also indirectly fruit quality in palm fruit. And yet that process of pollinizers and pollinator model is really unchanged sort of since, the domestication of trees and growing fruit commercially. We introduce pollinators. In this case, I see a photo of a pallet of hives in an older cherry orchard, and this grower will have interplanted pollinizers at various densities and distributions. And they're basing the entire year's profit and quantity and quality of fruit on that old model. And there are many, many challenges with that model. I'll describe just a few of those at the outset here. With respect to pollinizers, I get a lot of questions from growers. Do I have enough? Is it the density and the distribution of the pollinizers in my apple, in my cherry block, is it sufficient? Should I be using a different plan? And so we see sometimes in nursery catalogs different suggestions for patterns of pollinizers in these crops. And yet it is certainly an imprecise science. Often there's problems with lack of overlapping bloom. This is an image of an orchard in Tasmania. Actually, that would be a dire scenario if the bloom really were that bad. There's happened to be two cultivars. But it proves the point that there is variability in flowering phenology and flowering timing. And we tend to see more and more often now growers complaining of that traditional block where pollinizer overlap had been successful, and yet as we look at variable spring climate conditions, that it is unsuccessful. So this is an issue. Pollinizers also distribute pollen-borne viruses. This is well documented. And more recently, we've also recognized the role that pollinizer trees are playing in harboring pests. In fact, there was a famous case a few years ago in apples with a fungal disease that was being harbored in Manchurian crab apples. So this is a problem, again, that goes back to this classic pollinizer-pollinator model for fruit set. Okay, pollinators. This is largely, particularly in the Pacific Northwest, where we don't have a lot of native pollinators. It's introduced species of Apis mellifera. And there remain concerns about the distribution and the density of pollinators. Growers wondering, how many hives per acre should I have? Would two more hives per acre be beneficial? Again, this is an imprecise science. I suspect there's nobody in here who isn't familiar with colony collapse disorder and it becoming a federal priority for research and investment to address the issues and the threats to specialty crop production because we rely upon these pollinators. And that also leads to, therefore, an increase in cost for pollinators. It used to be $50 to $60 per hive, and now we've seen an approximate doubling of that for growers in the Pacific Northwest. A couple of other issues. I'll go to the last one first here, which is variable environmental conditions that are fairly well documented, that spring climate and the sensitivity of Apis mellifera to spring climate conditions. There have been a couple of good presentations on that subject already. The other one is variable colony performance. If I were to tell you three hives per acre is what's required, I can guarantee you that three hives per acre year after year after year is not the same thing. We also have some evidence that every third tree, every third row for pollinizer distribution and density is not the same thing because variability year to year in the viability of the pollen in your pollinizer trees. So the point here is, this is an imprecise, I wouldn't even call it a science so much, maybe almost more of an art, but the pollinating power in a fixed orchard design, which is established at planting, varies annually and in many cases unpredictably. So with that, we began with a not necessarily a novel concept, but we've looked at this idea of a precision pollination system. And I'll describe to you a little bit of our research results and where we think it may go in the future. It's comprised of three steps, the first of which is the collection of pollen. seeing here baskets of harvested cherry flowers. There are companies in Washington State that do this. They employ people to pick flowers, and they collect the pollen from those flowers. Oops, I went one too far. The second step, then, is to suspend the pollen. So this is where it becomes a little bit novel. We're not talking about dusting out pollen and puffing it. We're not talking about placing it at the hive inserts and having bees pick up that additional pollen. We're talking about putting it into a liquid suspension, keeping it alive and viable, and then spraying it out in your orchards to effect pollination or fertilization in a precision way. So, several challenges from the outset. Probably you're looking at this is a scanning electron microscope of a stomatic surface of a young cherry flower. That's a very small target. To put something into a sprayer and intend to hit that target is very difficult. Secondly, pollen loses viability in an aqueous solution. It just doesn't. It hydrates quite quickly, and once it's hydrated, if it's not on the surface of the stigma, it's wasted. And also, this vision isn't necessarily considered green. People often misconstrue what I'm going to present as wanting to replace bees and things, and that's not really what we're trying to do. So under the first component, then, pollen suspension, what I can tell you so far from a few years of investigation is that we need to use, I'm putting in quotes here, a pure pollen. This previously off-the-shelf product was insufficient. It was comprised of pollen, but also anther pieces, pieces of dried and crushed filaments, and they rehydrated quite quickly in our suspension and clogged filters and nozzles in the sprayers. So we've worked with commercial pollen providers to purify the pollen. Secondly, I've indicated here that pollen solubility is improved with several additions, and that's intentionally vague. Right now, Washington State University is pursuing protecting the intellectual property on this. But with these additions, we can integrate pollen into a suspension quite readily, and we can also keep it alive for, in our studies, at least 2 hours, which we feel is actually more than sufficient. It's plenty of time for a grower to put it into a spray tank and spray it out. A couple of slides then. This is Probeer here looking at pollen viability through the microscope. We do that several ways. But very briefly, what we'll do is assess viability in different suspension media mixes. We looked at many potential components with the goals of extending viability of pollen. And here you can just see for the Rainier cultivar for sweet cherries, there was a concentration optimum at which pollen viability was eightfold greater after 60 minutes when we had a 2% solution. We've also looked at additions of surfactants, for example, commercial off-the-shelf surfactants. Here's a contrasting scenario. Germination of Rainier cherry pollen after 60 minutes, quite low, less than 10%, with the suspension media that we were developing and Regulade, great maintenance of viability, and yet it's the same suspension media with AdWet 90, another one, pollen dead, not a single one alive. So there are certain additions that we wouldn't recommend or consider. We believe that it is important to utilize an electrostatic application system. In this case, we've partnered with a company in Mount Angel of Oregon called On Target Spray Systems, and they've been quite supportive in providing us with these smaller electrostatic sprayers to utilize for our field trials. These are, as a result, very low-volume applications. We tend to be about 100 liters per hectare or 12 to 13 gallons per acre. So it's really almost a mist or a light fog. Wind is a practical problem with this type of an application, probably the number one problem. So with that volume, we're not working in cherry orchards that look like that. This sort of ties into the presentation I'm going to give in a subsequent pomology session and our vision for orchard structures and where we think orchard systems should be moving for sweet cherries. And this is an example of the UFO system with early robin and early maturing Rainier type, especially high value product on a precocious and dwarfing rootstock drained to a fairly upright V, but a fruiting wall architecture in which your target is really only about 6 inches of depth on one wall and 6 inches on the other side. There are two general processes that we're addressing this issue with, and I apologize for the quality of this video because I was driving the tractor and shooting with my iPhone at the same time, trying to go straight. So it's not terrific, but this was taken this spring when we're pollinating a early robin orchard in the Yakima Valley. And so there's two ways. One is supplemental pollination, and that's what was depicted in the video. So that is a grower who has pollinizers in the orchard. They were bringing in bees in that scenario, and we were simply going out and adding pollen to that situation. The second one, and the one that we're particularly interested in, is a longer-term prospect, and that's what we're calling replacement pollination. And the vision here is one in which orchards will no longer plant pollinizers, and they will no longer introduce pollinators, and this is what pollination would look like in the future. So how do you test that? Well, it's quite simple to test supplemental applications. Here are some early results, and again with sweet cherry, though we have evidence in apple, particularly strong evidence in apple as well as pear. Here's about a 10% increase with a single supplemental pollination application in Tiatin. And here's what we did to try and mimic this replacement pollination concept. So it's putting insect netting around replicated blocks of three or four trees and spraying through that so that we knew there was no pollinator intervention. And you can see here in this one case, statistically similar though, highly variable yield when two applications of supplemental pollen through those nets. Another example here of about a 10% increase in Tiatin sweet cherry. These are all commercial orchards here. From a single application of 30 grams of pollen per acre applied, somewhere around 60 to 70% of full bloom. A little bit more detailed trial. In this one, we were investigating the role of pollen rate. And so the 1X is 15 grams of pollen. The 2X is 30 grams of pollen applied at somewhere around 50% full bloom or somewhere around full bloom. Best results and increases in fruit set, quite significant here, with two applications applied at about 50% and again nearer to full bloom. And the rate of pollen in this case we found was less important. One of the most interesting trials was done a couple of years ago. A grower in the northern areas of Washington heard about our work in the earlier districts and said, well, I'm going to be pushing out this Regina block because it's not producing because of poor overlap with the pollinizers. And we went in and said, well, it's a good candidate to try it. And we had a 20% increase in fruit set, and the grower decided to keep the orchard and had been utilizing this process last year as well. So to summarize, pollination and subsequently fertilization are fundamental for productivity and fruit quality, and there are perennial challenges, and I suspect increasingly more challenges as we go forward to this model of pollinator and pollinizer. And so we're presenting a vision that we hope to improve over the next few years. With that, thanks for your attention this morning. I will open the floor for questions or comments. Yeah, Craig? Well, you're right. Actually, the question or comment slash question was about the processes of pollination, insect-based versus, did you suggest even moving towards sort of wind pollination in this case? Yeah, sure. Right. So you're right. The process actually works fairly well. For example, if you think about apple scenario, I present these data to apple growers, and they say, we overset every year, and this is a problem. So we don't want to add pollen to the scenario. But the long-term goal is the one that we're really focused on here, though, Craig, which is this replacement pollination where you add precision to the process that right now is subject to so much biological variability.
I understand that, but I guess what I'm saying is there are other crops, yeah, but they are more
adapted to wind pollination. Adapted to wind pollination? Why? I mean, well, the crops that we're working with are not adapted to wind pollination at all. That's correct. For example, blueberry. Yeah. Good comment. Is there time for another one? Yeah, great question. It was whether or not we've considered combining this pollination process with other treatments that could extend effective pollination period, including AVG. And the short answer is yes, absolutely. We've done a fair bit of work looking at reasons why some varieties weren't productive and why some were, and a lot of it is unrelated to pollen completely, and that it is more related to what you're highlighting, which is ovule viability and ovule longevity. And the short answer is yes. We can, in fact, mix pollen with retain, for example. It's not in any way toxic to pollen. That was one of the ones that we looked at, too. Thanks for that question.
Okay. Thank you very much.